Hello and welcome to episode one of series two of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is still the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People, and a very, very happy new year to all of our listeners. I hope you've had a great break over the holiday season and that you've come back to work full of energy and enthusiasm for the coming year. It's obviously a challenging time for most of us, and there's some signs for optimism, but also there's going to be some challenges along the way. So hopefully the show is going to be relevant for you over these coming months and weeks as we evolve into the new future ahead of us. So welcome to the show. If this is the first time that you've listened to the show, hello. This is the first episode of the second series of the podcast. If you've not already done so, you can head across to our website and listen to series one, where there is the 30 episodes that we recorded last year on there, which you will find lots of interesting and relevant articles and interviews that we did over the course of the 6 months that we ran the podcast last year. So as we enter into series two, there are going to be some slight changes to the format of the show. It's going to be every 2 weeks now that we're going to be having the interviews. This is obviously the first show in this new series. So we do have an interview today, which we'll be coming on to shortly. But for the rest of the rest of the year, we're going to be running them on a fortnightly basis. So it's going to be showing up every 2 weeks in your stream. There may be some other shorter episodes that I'm going to record in between weeks, though. In between the interview shows, just probably me. Well, it will be me. Just talking about a topic or something that I found of interest. A much shorter show, but hopefully still useful to you. As I said, previous episodes across at the website. In particular, I'd like to draw your attention to episode 29. I was conscious that it went out on the 22nd of December, which was a week that I think a lot of people had already finished for Christmas or for the holidays, and therefore may have slipped your attention, as you may have not been listening to your usual podcasts that week. You may have been getting ready for the holiday season. So that was an interview with Jen Sproul, who is the CEO of the Institute of Internal Communications. So I know a lot of our listeners are involved with the Institute of Internal Communications, the IOIC, or are at least aware of it. So I definitely recommend that you have a listen to that episode, which is on our website, or you can find it on iTunes as well. Just one request. I'm not going to make multiple requests this week. One request. If you know anyone else who would benefit from listening to this show, or you might think you're not sure, but you're curious as to whether they might find it useful, please share it with them. Please send them a link to this episode either via your podcast platform that you're listening to it from, or if you're listening to it on our website, just send them a link. Ideally one or two or three people who you know who might find the show of use. And if everybody did that, it would really help us to grow our listenership, our visibility, help us to bring even more great interviewees to the show for you to listen to and to learn from. So that's my one request this week. Anyway, enough of that. As I said, Happy New Year, and on to today's interview. So for today's interview, I wanted to return to a topic that we've spoken about on previous episodes, which is purpose, and link it to something else we've spoken about, which is employee advocacy, and how do we create a sense within our organization that we have people who are willing to advocate our purpose to our customers, to our clients, to our other stakeholders, and to each other as well. So my interviewee works for an organization which is a large organization. It serves a very deep purpose in terms of being custodians of the environment, but also it's a commercial organization as well. It has to make a profit as well. So we're going to be looking at how an organization can balance those two requirements, but also enshrine that within its DNA, as it were, but also then build this army of people within the organization who are advocates for it, and are happy to share that purpose and walk the talk, as it were, on a daily basis, and deliver that purpose. So that's what today's interview is all about: linking purpose, advocacy, and how we get people within our organisations to advocate our purpose to our stakeholders as well. So I think I really enjoyed the conversation. It was a really pleasant conversation, a really insightful conversation, and I hope you enjoy it too. So my interviewee today is Linda McCormack, who is Head of Internal Communications at Anglian Water. Prior to that, Linda has held senior internal communication roles at organizations like Direct Line and other organizations within the financial services industry. And Linda's also worked as a communications consultant as well. So hello, Linda, how are you?
I'm grand, thanks, Craig. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I know I said you work for Anglian Water, so whereabouts in the country are you based at the moment?
So I'm based at home, and home is in the east of England, which is the Anglian Water region. So our office base is in Huntington, which is not far from Cambridge. That's our head office. But like many of your listeners and many people across the country, currently I'm at a desk in my daughter's bedroom.
Okay, so in east of England, and are you in Cambridge yourself or Cambridgeshire?
No, I live in Lincolnshire, in a little market town called Stamford, which is one of the prettiest places in the world. But I would say that, wouldn't I?
Yes, and Lincolnshire is a lovely county. So yeah, fantastic. So I think I said when we spoke in our kind of pre-conversation, I used to work in the water industry myself, so I've got a lot of respect for the water industry, but tell us a little bit about Anglian Water. How big is it? How many employees do you have? And roughly how big is your patch, as it were?
So Anglian Water, it's the largest water and water recycling company in England and Wales by geographic area. So it's although we're not the biggest water company, we have the biggest patch, I suppose. We supply water and water recycling services to about 7 million people in the east of England and also in Hartlepool. We have about 5,000 core employees, and then we have, and it varies in numbers depending on what's going on, but we have thousands more of our partner employees. So we apply an alliance model to lots of parts of the business where, you know, for big schemes or for lots of different things, multiple things, our IT systems, where we draft in big organizations like, you know, big building companies, big IT companies, because, you know, we're a reasonably small business. So we partner with these people in 5 or 7 year partnerships to help us get the right skill sets for the right jobs.
Okay, fantastic. And so I guess that's quite a rural area then, is it? You've obviously got some cities in there as well, but
we have some of the biggest growth areas, places like Cambridge and Milton Keynes, you know, as well as some of the more rural towns, which, you know, I suppose are in the depths of Norfolk, which are, you know, beautiful, and I suppose, you know, want to remain unspoiled. But yeah, so it's a very varied region, and you know, quite a varied population as well, population number two. So yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. One of the most interesting facts about our region, I think anyway, is that we are one of the driest regions in the UK. So we get less rainfall per head than Jerusalem.
That's a good pub quiz question.
It's rain here in the east of England. Although you wouldn't know today, it's literally tipping it down as I'm looking at it.
No, I can imagine. Well, anyway, so that's brilliant. Thank you for that. That's good, really good background. So, Linda, we met on LinkedIn, and we got into this sort of conversation about you know, the work that you were doing, and one of the areas that really kind of I thought would be interesting to explore with you, and that our listeners would probably find interesting, was this idea of developing pride and advocacy amongst employees. And I've touched upon this in previous episodes before, but in a kind of a retail environment, I think it's interesting to explore it in a kind of a service environment, but also in the, you know, the very different type of business that yours is. And one of the things you mentioned, and maybe we'll start off by, you can tell us a little bit about this, is that Anglian is one of the first water company, one of the first water PLCs to embed its purpose into its formal articles of association. So be really good if you could maybe just explain a little bit about how that came about, and maybe for some of the listeners who don't know what an articles of association are, maybe you just sort of explain what that is and how the significance for you is actually embedding that in a kind of formal process or formal document like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, actually, and it still is interesting. It's an interesting time. So you're absolutely right. We are the first company to in our industry to, we believe in the utility industry, to make this change and firmly embed purpose into the sort of governing documents of the business. So the Articles of Association, and you're going to catch me out here, but they're the things that are the legal way the business is run. So I guess when it's embedded in the articles, it means that we will always take into account our purpose when thinking about our plans, our strategies, our shareholders, everything like that. So it's quite a significant thing to do, I think. Because it's not, you can't back out of it, I guess, is really the main thing.
Yeah, it's kind of committed. Yeah, it is literally baked in then, yeah.
It really is, yeah. So it means internal and social priorities, you know, do always sit alongside the need to deliver fair returns for shareholders. So it's not about the fast buck ever. So that sort of was kind of how it came about in terms of the actual practicals. I think it's fair to say, and I've been in Anglian Water 7 nearly 8 years now, which, you know, is a baby compared to most people in Anglian Water, to be fair. But it's kind of inherent in the business. The business has always been a business that is very sustainable ethos, very, very purpose-driven at its core. But I think it was something that was never really fully acknowledged or articulated, is probably the best way to put it, until we decided to actually do that. There was a realization many years ago, but sort of, as sustainability and climate change and growth and water resilience come to the fore, there was a realization that, you know, we really do have a broad impact on the communities that we serve. And, you know, we have to act as a responsible citizen. We've always worked with purpose, and we just articulated it a couple of years back and made it real for the business, I suppose.
Yeah. So $65 million question, I'm going to put you on the spot now. What is the purpose? I mean, I know I'm sure it's summarized, but it's sort of picking up all sorts of things that are in the spot.
Our purpose at Anglian Water is to bring environmental and social prosperity through the region we serve, through our commitment to love every drop.
I like that. That's nice.
And social prosperity is really key for us. We are custodians of the environment, and we have, it's like I said, you know, we have to be responsible citizens. And social prosperity is something, you know, you can't run a business without water. You can't run a home without water. You can't run a school without water. Our CEO, I mean, he hasn't said it in a while, but he used to say his worst nightmare was Anglian Water without the water. And that's our job. We are responsible for making sure that our region can turn on taps and flush toilets.
And I think we, you know, as I said, as someone who worked in the water industry, it's one of those things you only sometimes recognize when there's a problem, when your drains or the sewer's blocked, or you've turned your tap on and it's not there, or it's the wrong color. That's the only time you kind of, otherwise you just take it for granted. But you're absolutely right. As someone who's worked in the water industry many years ago, you know, that criticality for both industry and for your domestic customers is vital. Mm-hmm. And I like the way you've captured that and that statement, you know, although I've worked in the water industry, I think, you know, you don't need to be, you know, it explains, it does exactly what you mean it to, and it's very accessible. So I really like that. And so it's that principle of balancing the, you know, obviously you've got a business to run, but that responsibility to be custodians is now baked in. So, you know, I guess, as I said, I've worked in the water industry, and you acknowledged this when we spoke, is that, you know, the water PLCs in the UK. So for anyone who's listening from outside the UK, just to explain that the water industries in the UK are basically operating in a regulated monopoly environment. And I know the from my time there, and, you know, looking back into the industry now, I'm outside of it, is that it can sometimes be used as a bit of a, a bit like, well, some, there's many other sort of institutions and organizations that get used a bit like a football, and people use it as at times to justify, you know, one sort of ideology or another. But I guess it's a challenge from how do you help manage that external and internal perception of point of view around, you know, that the fact that you've got this purpose, but at the end of the day, people can only get their tap water from, in your area, and from Anglian Water. And I know it's that sort of some elements of competition, but how do you reconcile that and square that up with either, well, mainly with your, in, you know, your internal audience, but I guess we're talking about a kind of external, internal persona here for the organization as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think externally, and it is, you're right, it can be very difficult sometimes, but, you know, our sort of reputation goes before us. We are a high-performing water company. We, you know, we came top of the Ofwat service table in the AMP 5-year period, which the water industry, you know, is bound to work in. We have so many great accolades. Accolade is wrong, and I don't want to be sort of boastful, but we have so much to be proud of, and so much that we can back up. We get the proof points right. So when we go out and talk about what we do, it's not empty. We can really back it up with things like, you know, our work in some of the areas like Wiz Beach, and we're moving into Lowestoft, where we're supporting communities in regenerating their areas, in terms of employment and skills and schooling, and, you know, all sorts of great things. We, you know, we are we're part of a huge drive. We were leading really with our 5-point green plan, and I don't know if you saw just this week. Oh, no, it was last week on the 12th that the UK water sector launched its carbon roadmap, and that's a global first. So we're the first industry in the world to do that. And, you know, Anglian Water is part of all that. We've won the Queen's Award for Sustainability twice. That's no mean feat. We're Glassdoor Best Place to Work in 2019. I could go on and on, Craig. So I guess my point about it is that externally, we, you know, when we get flack thrown at us, we can go, but hang on a minute, you know, we have all these proof points, you know, we're not just, it's not just empty words.
No, it's not like you're just sitting back and you know, saying, you know, whatever, you know, you've got no, you know, not that you would do that, but you are running your business and leading your business in a way that is, you know, is the right way to do it, and also you are continuously improving. You're not just sort of sat on your laurels, as it were.
Absolutely not. I mean, innovation is hugely important, but, you know, as well, you know, our CEO, lots of viewers or listeners might know him. He's Peter Simpson, and he's very passionate. He's passionate about the water industry. He's passionate about sustainability. He's passionate about resilience. This kind of thing is not just words for him. It genuinely means something, and that then filters through the organization. Of course it does. So as an internal comms person, in some ways, I feel very lucky, because I have worked in roles where, you know, it was lip service, and you're trying to spin something that doesn't sound true or doesn't sound authentic, you know, even to the people working on the ground, and it always feels a bit disingenuous. So I do feel quite privileged to be in a role where not just our CEO and our directors, but, you know, our wider investor board are fully behind the ethos of the business, and trying to deliver, you know, our purpose. So it's a bit sort of, you know, sometimes it's already there. It's inherent in the business. And the other thing about it is, you know, again, Anglian Water people love Anglian Water. People in Anglian Water rarely leave. They're very, you know, I think we're going to come on to this a bit later, but people are proud to work for Anglian Water. So what we do, I guess, from an internal comms perspective and helping people understand the purpose, you know, that's very lofty, isn't it? And if you're somebody who's knocking on people's doors all day taking water samples, or you're, you know, laying pipes and it's rainy and horrible and you're going out in the middle of the night to fix a leak, or, you know, any of those things, you know, it's all very well talking about a lofty purpose. But I think, again, from a core internal comms perspective, what's really worked for us is helping people understand that it's what they do day in and day out. That's what really makes a difference. And that's how you help them ladder up their daily roles, tasks, you know, jobs into the why, the what, and the how, which is what we did.
Let's talk about that because I'd like to, because as I think you've acknowledged at the beginning, is that, you know, you've been in Anglian Water for, what did you say, seven or eight years now, and you recognize that that's kind of you're just joined relatively, you're a new starter, and I remember from my time in the water industry, you know, there were people there who'd been, you know, there from you know, sort of getting on 30, 40 years, and clearly it's an industry that it commands a lot of loyalty, but with that comes a lot of inherent challenges as well in terms of trying to change the culture and particularly if you know, when I was there, it was just post privatization, and I'm sure there's still, as you know, some people there who still refer to it as the water board, which is how everybody used to refer to the water company I used to work for. And so tell me a little bit about how you've started to get that you know, that instill that. So, you know, as you said, you know, your guy who's or woman who's just dug a hole and, you know, repaired a water pipe, and they're up to their knees in mud, and they've got some money sort of coming to the hole and saying, "Me water's gone off. What am I going to do?" How do you kind of instill them to have that kind of purpose and that sort of corporate social responsibility?
So I think it is difficult in those situations, and it's, you know, disconnection is a problem now, especially, isn't it? Even with all the technology. One of the things I think we do quite well, and I'm proud to say, in Anglian Water and in general, but, you know, I'm speaking for the comms team, is we do quite a bit of co-creation. So, you know, getting people involved when we're talking about stuff before we even build it, finding out what makes people tick, what doesn't make them tick, and how they feel. And again, it goes back to this kind of pride in Anglian Water. We did research for, you know, a big customer drive and also a culture program, and it brought out so much, as these things do. That's a whole other day's podcast, I'm sure. But anyway, the main thing we discovered that people were proud, especially, you know, well, everybody feels proud to work for Anglian Water because water is so vital, and people are genuinely proud of what we do and how we do it. And it was kind of harnessing that pride. But also what came up was people had amazing stories. I mean, you know, we were talking to one guy who pitched up. He was about to retire. He had worked in Anglian Water for not, you know, a bit over 50 years. That's 50 wow. years, guys, not 15. You know, he was telling us a story of when he started in Anglian Water at 14, and back in the day, and his first job every morning was collecting the eggs from the chicken coop on site and these are his words, quote, "for the gaffer's breakfast."
Yeah, brilliant.
Just, you know, they are, those stories are gold dust, aren't they? Because it's such a different world now. So yeah. I guess it was harnessing those really great people stories and, you know, talking about the you know, but bringing a little bit of history in, but, you know, obviously in a way that shows how far we've come and, you know, how, you know, the amazing work we do and how far we have to go. But I think, you know, you can't lose, I mean, I wouldn't want to lose fact of the sort of comms 101. We did sort of launch into a great internal comms campaign. It was, you know, it's worked really well. It's sort of, we talked about the why, and I think, again, going back to a lofty purpose, you have to explain to people, or I felt, and it has worked, explaining to people what it is and you know, what is a purpose, and, you know, it's a North Star. If everybody can get behind this North Star, this common goal, it inspires change, it inspires better ways to do things. And also the thing that I think is very, I'm quite passionate about this, but the thing I think is people miss sometimes about a purpose is a purpose is a guiding star. It's forever pursued, but it's difficult to reach. Yeah. And that's why it inspires change. The fact that we never quite get there means that we always need to evolve, explore, transform, you know, find better ways. And that's what Anglian Water is all about. We have to find ways to, you know, provide the essential services that we do, you know, in a future where climate change is just, you know, rolling at us at a rate of knots, where, you know, growth and there's more people all the time, more houses all the time. It's really important. So that was kind of the why. And then the what was the mission, I suppose, if we're, you know, let's go back to the 80s. And that's basically, you know, our mission statement, although we don't use it very often, is water is our business. We handle with care and we don't cost the earth. And that supports the purpose. So you can start to see the ladder forming. And I have quite an analytical mindset, I'm told, by my personality type things. So for me, logical steps make sense. And then we got everybody in the business together. Well, not everybody, but like, you know, everybody from various different communities. So lots of representatives of people across the business to then build our values, which are the things that underpin the whole thing. They're the standards of behavior. They help us support and challenge each other. And through the tough times, as well as the good times, they help us underpin our mission and purpose. So you kind of had why a purpose is important, what we do, and you know, our values. The values are the things that matter here in Anglian Water, the behaviors that matter.
And how did you is it when you talked about the co-creation workshops earlier, was the co-creation workshops about creating the vision, the mission, the purpose, the mission and the values, or are you talking about something more kind of operational? And if not, how did you?
It was mostly about the values. So that we sort of went out, we did a lot of consultation with customers about our purpose and making sure that it resonated with the people in our region and the communities in our region. So we did quite a lot of work externally. We did some work internally as well. But crux of the work, or the big piece of work, was all around the values. So through, we did a bit of a culture program, and we also did kind of simultaneously, but more or less just before, we launched a big sort of which was multi award winning, to be fair. We launched a big customer program called Make Today Great, which is about making life better for our customers every single day. And we, through those co-creation workshops, we got an awful lot out of, you know, how people feel, what they think. And values was something that came out. We didn't have values before that. So people wanted, when we dug deeply into it, people didn't actually say, oh, we want values, but it was basically what they were saying was, you know, it would be great to have this core set of behaviors. So we went back out, and it was almost like a bit hackneyed phrase, you said we did, but we went back out and went, right, come on then, let's get this started, let's do this, let's and it dovetailed really well, because you know, we were starting to talk to our customers and communities about our purpose. But you know, you have to have the ladder. You have to have, you know, your 25. Well, we've got a 25-5 1-year strategy, so a 25 big strategic direction statement plan. We've got the 5-year plan, which is we is part of the whole regulatory cycle, and then obviously, you know, we have a business plan for every year, every business. So and it all ladders up. So you pull all these things, all these chapters of the book together, and
there's a line of sight.
You make a book.
I really like that line of sight, and I think that's really important to have that alignment. And again, I'm like you. I like to be able to see a logical flow from, you know, and we have 5 questions that we use when we're working with our clients. And it starts with, what are we aiming for? What's our long-term sort of goal or vision or mission? How will we get there? What's my role? How are we doing? And then, are we serious? And we ask those questions, and there's a load of sub questions underneath them. What that helps us to do is see a clear line of sight between, you know, what our long-term goal is, but also then what are some of the behaviors that support or undermine that we can observe, so we can kind of be really, really kind of granular about how we need to treat each other, how we need to treat our customers, etc. So there's that connectivity, and everybody can see then hopefully where their role fits in. So I really like that logical flow that you've just talked about then. I think that's a really good, good learning point.
Yeah, it's funny. And on a complete aside, I worked for a really great lady in Direct Line, Kay Fletcher. Shout out to Kay if she's listening. Taught me loads and was very generous with her knowledge. One of the things she said to me once was, she said, you know, people think internal comms is about being creative. She said, it's not. Internal comms is about logic. And that's always really sat with me. And I think there's a bit of everything, isn't it? It is about being creative. You have to think differently and creatively about how you get the messages across. But you know, a logical flow and thinking about how people's brains work is also really important.
Mm. Yeah. And being able to answer those questions, you know, and I always say, if you can't answer those five questions for people when they, you know, either proactively or when they ask them to you, or there's a misalignment between, you know, if people can't see a line of sight between their what their contribution is on a daily basis, and that overall purpose, they're obviously going to feel a lack of sense of belonging. They're not going to feel as though they're doing anything meaningful. Whereas if they can, it's massive. You know, it can be a huge driver of engagement and productivity and all of the things that we want in our organizations, can't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a really great clip. And I'm going to say this, but I think it was JFK, but I might be wrong. It's a great clip on YouTube, which is about one of the presidents going to Cape Canaveral, and he speaks to a janitor. I'm sure everybody knows that. I love it. I think it's great. He says, "But what do you do?" And he goes, "I'm here. I'm helping to put a man in the moon." Sweeping the floor, but you know, it is that line of sight, isn't it? And I think if you get it makes a difference.
And I think I like that story as well. And I think I always reflect on it, is that, you know, wouldn't it be great if every organization had that ultimate clarity, but obviously with the amount of different stakeholders and sometimes there's ambiguity about, you know, are we, you know, and even though you've reconciled that, I think it's sometimes, I used to work in an organization where, you know, you could have, we were sort of, you know, there were about 30 or 40 different things we were trying to do that were covered to putting a man on the moon. And it sometimes it was really unclear as to which one of those was the most important. So I think that's the art, I think, as you say, that analytical side of comms, which is to be able to iron out all those inconsistencies and help them to kind of merge together into one consistent narrative, isn't it?
It is. And it's not easy. And I think, we're probably straying from the topic, but it is definitely something. So, you know, when I talk to other comms people and, yeah, it's something that is a challenge in general. It's this sort of, one of my colleagues called it, you know, schizophrenia in the business. It's like,
And sometimes our leaders don't help with a kind of mild form of attention deficit disorder. They're always kind of after the next big shiny thing. And I think that's sometimes our role as trust advisors, is to remind them that, you know, we've made a commitment to doing this, so let's do it. Let's go after the next shiny thing after we've done that. So
exactly.
you were right. We're talking about advocacy and pride, and I think we've kind of digressed a little bit, but in a healthy way. So let's dial it back into that. You know, how you've started and continue to build that advocacy and pride within your people. And you talked a little bit about the co-creation workshops, and a couple of other things you mentioned to me when we had our kind of pre-conversation a few days ago was about one was the priority services register, and I think that's a very kind of clear thing. And then the other thing I wrote down was touch points, and you might need to remind me whether that was something I wrote down or actually something that we discussed. I think what I was thinking about there is it was more around, you know, I'm imagining one of the things you've done is recognize that, you know, throughout the working day, whether it's I'm not sure what you call them, inspectors, but the people who go out and, you know, the technical guys and girls turn the mains off, and if it needs the crew to come out and fix it, they all have touch points with your customers where that, you know, is the sort of moment of truth, I guess, whether it's that or whether you're digging up someone's path outside their front door. So I'd like to talk about that, but also the other thing, which is much more kind of tangible, is this priority services register that you talked about as well. So I don't know what order you want to cover those two in.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I think that the question you're asking is, you know, how do you get your employees to be advocates and embody and live? And you know, this is what we talked about. I'll go for the priority services register first. It is just an example of one thing, but one of the things we did talk about is, and this is where I use this example, is people generally like to be happy, and one of the great ways I found to create advocacy is to create a happy advocate. So if I can do, you know, if I catch on to something or latch on to something that will, it makes me happy to tell you about, then I'm a happy advocate. So and that makes me feel good, so therefore I want to do it again. It's logic, it's, you know. the, you know, it's not just Anglian Water, but, you know, all water companies, and I believe all utility companies indeed, have a kind of a priority services register. It's called a priority services register in the water industry. I don't know whether it is in other utilities. And it's for customers who would be, I suppose, at the top of the list if their water went off for any length of time, or if there was, a problem, I suppose. And we would look at those, we would, you know, come and, you know, make sure that those people had a water supply in whatever way. It could be tankered in or bottled water or whatever, but they would be sort of, you know, the people who would be first on the list, literally to get a water supply, an emergency water supply. And, you know, people associate that with, people never see themselves on that. They never think that that might be them, but it applies to so many. It's so broad. So for anybody who's listening in the UK, go on your local water company's website and look at the priority services register. You will be surprised at the criteria. So, you know, pregnant women, women with small babies, you know, there's all sorts that, you know, where you might think it's the people who are ill or, you know, whatever. It's not. It's a wide range of people. Anyway, I digress. So what we asked our people to do, because we, you know, especially during COVID, we wanted to make sure that, you know, the people who really needed to be looked after were absolutely getting looked after, was we asked our colleagues to spread the word about the priority services register. And they did in spades. And, you know, my own example was, you know, my both next door neighbors on either side, neighbors across the road. I put it out in local Facebook groups, and people just came back to me and they were so thrilled to be told, you know, again, I was a happy advocate. It made me feel great that I'd done this small little thing. And that's been really, really powerful. But I think, you know, I suppose as an internal comms person, it's our role, it's my role to make sure that the people in the business know about that. So you've got to say to people, do you know about the priority services register? Because if not, here's what it's all about. So when you're out doing something, don't forget to mention it. Or another great example, and this is a true example of a colleague who was you know, a network technician, and it's the small things that make a difference, Craig, in a customer's house. Realizing that this an elderly lady who lived on her own, realizing from the conversations he had that maybe she could be on a better tariff. Now, one of these really old-fashioned people who was determined to pay her bill, but he could clearly see that, you know, she didn't have a lot of money. And so, you know, but he didn't just tell her. He didn't just tell her to ring about her bill. He stood there with her, and he rang on his mobile phone and got through to the billing centre, and then put her on. And then between the two of them, they got her on a different tariff. And it's just, those little things are.
It's nice, isn't
it's
it?
It's just amazing.
And I guess that covers the point.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, and I was going to say, I guess that kind of covers the point around touch points, because they're two, you know, I gave two very stereotypical ones. I mean, they for me are manifestations of those touch points, where one is whether it's, you know, are you on the priority service register? But the other one is that, you know, someone who you can help in some way and be, as you say, a happy advocate and tell them, oh, did you know we can do this for you? Or actually, you don't need to pay us as much money, which I'm sure is, you know, would be, you know, for some people would be, oh, wow, you know, you actually helped me to pay your company less money by asking me what tariff I was on.
It's crazy.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
But I just come back. It's funny, isn't it? Because we are probably, you know, the water industry probably, you know, one of the only industries where, like, we are really actively encouraging people to use less of our product all the time.
Yes, exactly.
But one of the things that we've found, I suppose, most challenging is, you know, the split, I suppose, between field staff and office-based staff. That's probably wrong. It's the split between customer-facing staff and non-customer-facing staff. You know, we believe in Anglian Water that, you know, everybody is customer-facing staff, because, you know, and this, if my team decide to listen to this, it will be a joke, because this is my mantra. And they, you know, they literally throw stuff at me. Well, back in the day in the office, they did used to throw stuff at me every time I did it. Most of the people in Anglian Water are our customers, and most of their friends and families are our customers too. So, the advocacy piece is huge. And I've lost my train of thought there. remember.
But I think what you were saying is that you cannot go out as an employee of Anglian Water without having a potential touch point with a customer, because everybody around you is customers.
So when we talk about the distinction in the office or in the business about customer and non-customer facing, it's we're all customer facing.
Yeah,
we all have the opportunity to make an impression on our customers.
Yeah. And I think just to kind of close things off, because I was going to ask you a little bit about COVID, and I know, I know the water industry has been key workers, and quite rightly so. And how has that worked in terms of, what you've just been saying there, which is the differentiation between, the frontline people who have been working out in the field and fixing mains and turning water supplies on and off and cleaning water pipes if they need it, and the people who've probably been working from home, and that sense of we're actually all on the front line together, has that helped with the connection with the purpose and that connectivity, or has that been an additional challenge? I'm sure it's been a challenge, but is that part of the challenge that it's generated for you?
Yeah, I think the phrase just used there about whether kind of COVID has helped with the purpose. And I think absolutely, yes, it has. I think one of the things that has, it was a bit zeitgeisty before, but it's even more now is, people in general, society in general is now looking to big business to fix some of the big national and global problems. So, and I think that's been, that's been brought to the fore with COVID. So in terms of sort of, helping us sort of pursue our purpose, COVID has brought that sort of purpose-driven business and, what we can do for the communities we serve to light. In terms of I'll be entirely honest, it has been a challenge, as any IC professional will tell you right now. But the challenge for us has been the sort of, I think it's shifting the perception of, our very hardworking and brilliant field staff and customer facing staff, they think potentially some of them that we're working from home is just a cushy number. And it's kind of swings and roundabouts, isn't it? Because on the flip side, a lot of our people who have been, not forced to work from home, I suppose we were forced to work from home, certainly in the initial lockdown, didn't find it that easy, don't have the space, don't have the, are not set up to work from home for any length of time, as many people are. So it's been that real sort of, it's okay for you guys over there. Well, it's not, it's not okay. It's, it's swings and roundabouts. So it's been trying to balance that out. But we have a really great wellbeing plan as well, wellbeing offering and wellbeing program. So, and we've done sort of quite a lot of stuff to try and bring field staff and office staff together virtually so they can talk about, how their various different challenges make them feel and get to understand each other a bit more, which again is really, really helping. But I guess for us, planning for a crisis is vital, and luckily we do it all the time because as UK's infrastructure, we have to be able to plan for all sorts of eventualities in the water industry. So we run kind of crisis exercise all the time. So we did have a plan in place exactly for a pandemic, and it was number one on the global risk register. So so we just put those plans in action. Learned a lot in the process, to be fair.
I think that's really important, that point you made there, though, about that empathy that we, I've heard that in with other clients, not necessarily, water industry, but other industries that are kind of key workers or people who've carried on working as normal, and those who've been, sent off packing with their home offices, as it were, and it's not been easy. And also, with people who've been furloughed as well, I think there's been organizations where people have been furloughed and not been furloughed. There's a kind of a perception that the other half's had it easy, and that, you've been able to carry on working, and you've been being paid 80% for doing nothing. And it's not been easy for anybody. And one of the challenges we come out of that is there's not to create some sort of hierarchy of who's had it worse and hardest. We've all kind of struggled, and we kind of just need to walk in each other's shoes a little bit and understand that it's not been easy for anybody, and we just need to crack on and get going again, and we'll respect each other's positions a little bit more perhaps. So
I think that's right. It's just seeing things from somebody else's perspective. It's
Yeah.
Isn't that a secret of life, to be fair?
Absolutely. Well, no, look, that's been absolutely fantastic. I really like what, you know, we started off with talking about your articles associations, very formal, but you know, a real commitment. But I really like that, you know, I think there's some lessons for me and for our listeners around this, kind of making sure there's a clear line of sight, you know, being able to answer those questions. And then also just thinking about those touch points, whether it's something, you know, your equivalent of, I'm not saying every organization will have its priority services registered, but having that those points at which you can create those happy advocates within your workforce, I think are really really important lessons. And I think that final thing around COVID, I think, well, every organization, regardless of whether it's been key worker status or not, has a lot of not healing, but a lot of there's a bit of a kind of debrief that we're going to have to do when we get people back to some sense of, you know, business as usual. I think when the people are back doing, everybody's back where they should be and doing what they were doing, but albeit it's probably going to be very different. So
yeah, for sure.
I always ask my interviewees one question at the end of the interview, and it's about something that people who know you quite well, and you've already alluded to the fact that some of your team hopefully will be listening to this interview, so maybe that's the kind of acid test. So I don't know whether there's anything that what you're going to share with us is something you've shared with them, or whether it's kind of something that you have is kind of more public, but I mean we've only just met, so anything you tell me will be new to me other than what we've just talked about today. So what's the sort of, you would never have known this about Linda McCormack fact or piece of information that you're going to share with us, Linda?
Well, it's not that exciting. I'll still think, like, I'm probably one of the most vanilla people I know, really, in the end. So quite a lot of my team won't know that. Before I came to the UK in the 90s, I trained as a beauty therapist and TV makeup artist and ran my own successful business in Dublin. And I only came into internal comms when I came to live in the UK through a friend, because I needed a job.
Right.
And reason I say this, actually, Craig, there's a bit of logic behind this, or a bit of a sort of I guess maybe another interesting topic is, I've observed over the years that most people fall into internal comms rather than ever plan as a career path. And I just think, especially now, internal comms is such a vital role. I'm very passionate about it. Obviously, other people might not think that, but for me, it plays such a vital role in an organization. And it's really come into its own just during this pandemic, that I think that's a really interesting thing to explore. I don't know why I haven't explored it, but I think I have observed that it's not a career thing. People generally fall into it. And I just wonder.
Yeah, I agree. And it's something we talk about. And I mean, I'm a great example of that. You know, I used to work in the water industry. I used to manage sewage treatment works, and, you know, how I'm working in internal comms, albeit as a consultant. So I agree. Our last episode, or in the sequence of recording anyway, that will have gone out prior to this one, was an interview with Jen Sproul from the Institute of Internal Communications. I mean, one of the things she talked about is that they are, one of the things that the IOIC are trying to do, and one of their campaigns next year is going to be about a career of choice. So rather than, you know, I'll be very surprised if anybody who's in IC, you know, left university or college or school are thinking, you know, I want to go into IC. You know, maybe there's a handful, but it, as you say, it's quite rare, and it's so normally something that people find because they love it and it fits their skill set, or as you know, it's a marriage of convenience or whatever. So no, I agree, and I think that's it is something for the profession to look at, and like in the same way I think HR went through this journey sort of 20 odd years ago and becoming business partners and not just personnel departments. Mm-hmm. I think IC is on that kind of professionalization journey as well, and I think it's long overdue, because I agree it's a vital function within any organization. So that's good. I like that. I like you've kind of linked your story links to a theme that we've talked about, but also as a kind of lesson to it. So I think that was a great example. And thank you for sharing it. So, Linda, I know I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I was going to put your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. So if anyone wanted to kind of reach out to you, and maybe, you know, other people listening to the show who've kind of gone a similar journey or trajectory to yours, anything else do you have any other personas out there, or Twitter or anything like that you want to see, or is LinkedIn your kind of
LinkedIn's my kind of go-to, Craig. I'm really, as you probably can tell, I love to chat. So if anybody does want to get in touch or connect or whatever, then just get in touch.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I've really enjoyed that. And it's been a great conversation. And thank you for sharing your insights and the story of your company. And it sounds like it sounds like a really interesting journey that you're on. And I'll be watching with interest.
Great. No pressure then, eh? Thanks, Craig.
Thanks a lot, Linda. Take care.
All right,
thank you.
Bye.
If you're looking for some other ideas and inspiration when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement, I definitely recommend you jump across to our website and have a look on our blog page, which is thebigpicturepeople.co.uk/blog. We've got a number of different categories of blogs there, different topics that we write articles on, all of which will be relevant. We write articles about culture, values, employee engagement, implementing change, communicating strategies, communicating vision and purpose, and other specific topics like health and safety, which we help our clients with a lot. We do a lot of work in that area as well. So we've got lots of blog topics there. You can sort them and you can filter them out and find out anything that might be a relevance to you at the moment, anything you're looking for some ideas or inspiration on, then that might be a useful resource for you. So thank you very much for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you found this episode useful and interesting. We'd love to get your thoughts about the show and any questions you have or ideas for topics that you'd like to maybe cover in future episodes. You can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, future episodes, and we'll also let you know about anything interesting we found out about internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review. And if you know anyone else who might be interested in the show or might benefit from it, please let them know. Please share it with them and share them with them the links to the show and engagingic.com. Thank you very much.